You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trillia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Welcome back to the newchurches.com podcast. My name is Ed Stetzer, and we are excited about the ongoing conversations we're having about church planting. We've actually done hundreds of episodes in the newchurches.com podcast and made some shifts in format. I'm still here and I'll continue to be your host and often have co-hosts. So I just want to sound like my radio voice there because I have a radio show that probably there's no overlap between the New Churches podcast and my Saturday morning radio show on Moody Radio. Okay, so one of the things we're trying to do, we're making the New Churches podcast more church planting centric. That's going to be our focus on church planting and church planters. Now, you might find it interesting to know what are the most frequently wondered about church planting topics. So we actually did a little, I don't know if it's research, we just kind of gathered. For the first 8 episodes of the New Churches podcast, now we can't say the New Churches podcast forever because that would get on everyone's nerves, but for the New Churches podcast, we're going to be answering 8 of the most Googled church planting questions, right? The most Googled church planting questions. So these are the things that people are asking. So we're trying to answer what people are asking. So here's some of them, right? Where is church planting in the Bible? We're going to talk some about that because church planting is, those two words are never mentioned in the Bible. We're going to talk about where is it? What is a church planting movement, right? So David Garrison, perhaps most widely used definition of church planting movement. However, people use the term differently. We're going to talk about that. How do I get started in church planting? One of my favorite topics, because I feel part of my job is to talk some people out of church planting and to talk some people into considering and praying about it. How does funding work in church planting? Important. I know many of you like, get to that episode right away. Why is church planting so important? Love that. Why is church planting so hard? I will tell you, church planting is among the hardest things that I've ever done. Why do church plants fail? And when we get to that one, we'll have a little fun. There's actually been church planting autopsies. Todd Hunter, who's now an Anglican bishop, but was at the time he wrote that, the head of the Vineyard, has kind of started those kind of things. What do we look at when church plants fail? And today, we're actually going to look at the most Googled church planting question, what is church planting? Okay, so let me tell you a little format too. So I'm going to be part of the conversation, but also inviting other people into the conversation. So I'll be giving some advice and counsel and drawing advice and counsel from others. And I will tell you that the term church planting has been a family challenge for me. I come from a mostly non-Christian family, and I remember my father saying, so you're a church planter. And he was kidding because he knew sort of that meant the establishment of new congregations. He said, so what do you like? You like do gardening at a church? Is that what it is? You're planting plants? And, you know, we were just having a little fun, got a, you know, good old Irish background, having a little fun. But you know, people don't know what that means. So when I often work with the secular media and they're like, we can't use the phrase church planting because it doesn't mean anything to people outside of the movement. And then let me just tell you, there's a whole language inside. Like I was a parachute drop church planter. What does that even mean to people? We have all these launch service. What does that mean? Are we flying up with Jeff Bezos into space? I mean, what does launch mean? So we got all this language, but we got to come back to why would the most Googled church planting question be, what is church planting? So let me just frame it out, and then we're going to bring in our guest as well. So church planting is about starting new churches, and starting new churches is important for 2 primary reasons. First, there's a great need. We're going to address that in more detail when we talk about why church planting is important, and because the Bible commands us to plant churches. We'll talk more about that when we get to the biblical rationale. But let me tell you about my guest. So we got with us today, Rob Wilton. Rob is the founding pastor of Vintage Church in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he works as the Send Network City Missionary for Pittsburgh, which if you do not know, is an amazingly awesome city. Rob, thanks for joining us on the newchurches.com podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ed. And I think we had some fun 15 plus years ago together in New Orleans. So
that's right. And you were planting there as well. And so we vintage church, because the whole vintage, that was kind of a cool thing 15 years ago, but you're still using the name today. So you haven't given up on the vintage name. I like that.
Yeah, we're sticking with it.
Yeah, it's all good. What part of Pittsburgh are you in, Rob?
So we're in two locations. We're in the heart of the city, Mount Washington, that kind of overlooks the city, is our city location. And then out towards the airport, Moon Township. So they say townships. Yeah.
Township. It's townships. And it's not a state of Pennsylvania. It's the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And it's a little weird.
I moved from parishes to townships.
Yeah, that's so true. You can't go anywhere that has a normal county.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. So of course, as people listen to the podcast know, I had the privilege of planting three churches in Northwest Pennsylvania. Love Erie, Pennsylvania. Was there this summer preaching for my friend at Grace Church there in the Erie area, and visiting with the church I planted as well. Okay, so let's talk some about this, right? So, Rob, you started, we use the term interchangeably, but I'm going to talk about the difference in a minute, but you started two churches, one in New Orleans, one in Pittsburgh. So how would you answer the question, what is church planting?
So I have spent a lot of time, obviously, in the church planting world. I've drank the Kool-Aid. I'm hooked. We started a church in 2008 in New Orleans, and after a decade plus of ministry, we've now planted another church, as you've shared, in Pittsburgh. I love J.D. Payne's simple definition of church planting. And basically, he says in his book, Discovering Church Planting, evangelism that results in new churches. And so this is going to sound really crazy, Ed, but my roots are more with the Billy Graham Association. My dad served with Dr. Billy Graham. I grew up as an evangelistic kid going from revival to revival. Sometimes I responded when they started singing Just As I Am, just to wrap those services up. But I really believe I'm more a missionary that plants the gospel. And from planting the gospel, seeing people reached by Jesus, that's that evangelism, people saved, people trained up who are saved to become leaders of the church, and then equipping that church, that ecclesia, that gathering of people to fulfill the Great Commission, to go and do actually what you've just done, which is evangelism that results in new churches. So that's how I describe it in terms of church planting as a whole. The other way to describe it is an Instagram page.
Simple, clear, understandable, but true.
You know, you have a good Instagram, you got a church, right?
Yeah. It is funny how many church plants have amazing websites, but four people. And not that there's anything wrong with having four people, because you got to start with four people, but it is interesting sort of how this works. Now, just so you know, for those who are listening, Rob and I are going to go into a conversation a little bit. He's going to ask me some questions. I'll ask him some questions, and we'll kind of talk through some of what ultimately this looks like. So, Rob, want to come back to you? And all right, so one of the challenges is that the challenge to distinguish between I'll tell you a conversation with Andy Stanley. Andy Stanley once said, "Don't call me a church planter. I took 1,000 people from my dad's church and started a church." So there is church starting. And sometimes church starting can be because of a split. Sometimes it can be because an intentional group of people just want to start a new thing. But church planting seems to, or should, or I hope it will, have something more evangelistic. You mentioned J.D. Payne, which, by the way, I love. J.D. Payne was my grader back in the day, 100 years ago. So love J.D. He's now at Samford University. But one of the realities is most churches that are started are not planted,
right?
And planting takes a certain intentionality. So what does it look like? You talked about evangelism. What does it look like to evangelistically begin something rather than just to start something new and fresh?
Yeah, look, I came into this concept or this mission or this call of church planting being taught that if you saw a new church, it was because one church got mad at each other and went two different directions, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I was raised in. I remember somebody threw me the book, Confessions of a Reformation Rev.
I've heard that.
A guy named Mark Driscoll, if you hadn't heard of him. And I'm sitting here going, man, this is kind of cool, you know, hitting the streets and reaching people that are far from God. For me personally, this is how it happened. And you know, it's my story, but it really is how Vintage Church came to be in New Orleans. We were doing post-Katrina ministry. I was working for the organization called Mission Lab at the Baptist Seminary down there. And we're loving people in Jesus' name and helping people rebuild their lives. My wife's a massage therapist. And Ed, it is awesome being married to a massage therapist, if I can just let you know that. But we led one of her coworkers to the Lord as we're doing this ministry in an area of New Orleans where, to be honest, Katrina had wiped out a few established churches. And through that conversion, we started a Bible study. God called us out of the seminary campus into the heart of Uptown New Orleans. And that one Bible study in January of 2008 grew to 7 Bible studies by the fall. And we started gathering in this club on Magazine Street in New Orleans. And so I always go to the roots of my call to plant a church. To be honest, I didn't even know about websites and systems, and I didn't even know it was a possible thing, right? I didn't know how you got permission for this, but it came out of the harvest. My friend that was my wife's coworker coming to faith in Jesus, and then that movement of disciple making, you know, reaching people who are far from God, who weren't plugged into a church, formed into Vintage Church. Yeah. And so, Ed, you know, that's my experience in planting Vintage Church. And man, I love getting to ask you some questions, man. I've learned from you for a long time.
Oh, no.
Quoted you enough in my doctoral work on church planting.
Ouch. Yeah.
But Ed, church planting is about getting a church started where there is a need for one.
Yeah.
And so in your experience, how is a need like that discovered?
Yeah. So I think part of it is you're looking for places where there might not be a church, where there might not be a gathering community. So, it might be sometimes because there's an underrepresented gospel presence because of decline. That's what you talked about in New Orleans. When I planted in Buffalo, New York, it was the fastest shrinking city in America. The churches had closed and moved out. So it was obvious need. Sometimes the need is because of decline, because other churches have left. Sometimes the need is because of growth, right? So I planted a church in a suburb of Erie, Pennsylvania called Mill Creek. New people were moving out, new church there. That made sense. Sometimes it's because there's a niche of people. When I planted a church in Nashville, I mean, gosh, you wouldn't think to yourself, oh, Nashville needs more churches. Now, I happen to have a job there, so I did this as a volunteer, unpaid volunteer on the weekend, because I wanted to reach people who were new movers to the community who didn't connect well with some of the kind of the more southern culture churches. And so we planted a church that was primarily focused on new people moving to town who are from out of town. We did a hand raise once. The majority of our people were from other places. So that's a big part of, for us, is finding that place. And when you're planning in North America, you know, the more you go out of the South, you know, you're in Pittsburgh, you know, I grew up, outside of New York City. I mean, there's almost always a need for a place that's there,
right?
But also too, I think in places in the South, there are churches that are not connecting with a significant segment of people, and to be a church plant there. So I'm looking for need, because here's part of the key reason. I'm looking for churches being planted, not started. And plant, I like the word plant, even though no one in the media will use it because it's like too insider baseball. But I like the word plant because it requires a soil of lostness in which a church plant would grow. Now, I'm not saying right. You don't have some Christians. You always have some Christians. But it takes a soil of lostness. And I think that's part of the challenge is, for us, we have to then say, where are those pockets, those places, that soil of lostness,
right,
where ultimately a church plant can begin and thrive?
Ed, do you know in Montreal, La Chapelle?
Yeah, for
La Chapelle. Sure. I had the privilege right before COVID of preaching for David Baudier.
Yeah, he's great.
La Chapelle. And after 4 services, I mean, this is a powerful move of God if you put it anywhere in the world. But the fact of the ratio of lostness and the percentage of lostness, people who are far from God in the city of Montreal, it's a miracle of God what they've done. And we're sitting in the green room after a full day of preaching, and we start talking about that whole parable, right, of Jesus leaving the 99 for the one. And he said, man, because I asked him, I was like, man, you've got such an evangelistic heart in Montreal. Man, you're really going hard after people who are far from God. And he said, dude, the ratio is flipped for me here. Like, if Jesus is telling me if there's 99 found and I got to leave the 99 to go for one, in my city, I have one that's found. I got 99 who are lost. Yeah. I got to go and I got to get to work. And I just think that's an interesting perspective, especially when it comes to the necessity and the need for church planting, because we know how evangelistically effective true church planting is.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I love what they're doing in Montreal. Montreal and the Quebecois are the most unreached people group of that size in all the Americas. So, right. You know, the percentage of people who would define themselves as born again in Quebec, not just Montreal, is stunningly low. And so which does lead to the question, because, you know, you were in New Orleans, which is one different kind of cultural experience. And then I know, you know, your dad's in South Carolina. So you're in the deep South, and then you go to New Orleans, which is in the South, but not the South. And then you go to Pittsburgh. So you're experiencing deeper levels of secular population kind of on your trajectory each step that you have gone. So one of the things that I'm often asked by people is, if that's what church planting is, how should I decide where to plant a church? And I tell people to start by saying, Lord, if you want me to plant a church among an unreached people group, I'm willing to go there. Just put your yes on the table,
right?
Let God put it on the map. And then if that's not it, to consider some of the more secular areas of North America. And that could be Toronto. My daughter lives in Toronto. I want more churches planted in Toronto. It could be, Seattle, could be Pittsburgh, and be open to that. And then if God calls you to your hometown, and if your hometown is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and God calls you to that place, we're for that too. We're for church planting. We need church plants all over the place. But I do think there's a sense, I really want people to ask those questions. Is that where would God have me to go? So if church planting requires a soil of lostness, I got to ask the question, where would God have me to go in the process, if that makes sense? And I think finding that need is letting God speak to your heart, see where God's at work, and be obedient to his call to that place and to that people.
Yeah, the pursuit and the answering of God's call is truly why we plant churches, right?
Yeah.
This is not some sort of man-made job, career choice type of pursuit. No, this is a call of God. When I grew up in the the heart of the church, my dad alliterating everything as a pastor, I always coach up young guys who are trying to pursue God's call, that as you walk through the word, there's prayer, there's your passions, there's your performance, there's people, and there's places, right? And so God works through all those things. And for me, Ed, I don't know about you in terms of your different callings to different places. It's amazing how as I'm walking through the word, with church planting specifically, God always breaks my heart for a people. He always breaks my heart for a people. And yes, we can look at the stats. We can consider, how much need there is. But it's amazing how personal that gets for me. And so in New Orleans, you know, it was my wife's coworker that broke my heart to lead me to plant a church. As I left New Orleans and God called me towards Pittsburgh, there was a man that I had led to the Lord who was weeping so mad that I was leaving New Orleans to go to Pittsburgh, but told me if I hadn't come to New Orleans, he'd be lost and he would be divorced today. And so he looked at me square in the eyes and said, I know if God's called you to Pittsburgh, there's someone in Pittsburgh that used to be like me that needs to hear the gospel too. And so we're not going to let you stay. We're sending you to Pittsburgh. And then to fast forward, I've been in Pittsburgh now 3 years, and I can tell you about Adam. Adam, I led to the Lord watching my sons practice football. And this past year, he was, baptized, and now he's on our production team. Wow. I believe God always connects it personally. And I'm sure, Ed, you have stories like that, where God connected personal stories towards pursuing his call.
Yeah, I think you're right on. I think one of the things that people often, we're going to talk about this in a later episode of how do you know where you're called to plant a church, is I don't think you really can plant a church until you have a call to plant that church, right?
Right.
I think that's, you know, we see this responsibility, this burden. I can think back to the very first church I planted. I remember standing, I think it was Prospect Avenue and 7th Avenue in the city of Buffalo. Don and I were just there a few months ago. And I literally go to that spot. I park in that spot. It's downtown Buffalo, fastest shrinking city in America, not the place where most people want to be. And I just felt the Lord press in my heart, could go plant the church here. And it wasn't just the streets, it was the people. I could look at the people. And I think a key part of church planning is it's not about creating a place for you to preach. It's not about, I'm really excited about a building. It's a call to a people. When Paul had the vision in Acts chapter 16, you know, he had this night vision, I guess. And he saw this man from Macedonia saying, come over and help us.
Right.
Plural us, state of case pronoun, us, the Macedonian. That's Church Philippi. You know, beachhead into Macedonia was Philippi. So then we go from come over and help us to this this rich businesswoman, this, if we assume that the demon-possessed slave girl then becomes a follower of Jesus, it's this rich businesswoman, the demon-possessed slave girl, and a suicidal jailer. If they become the beginning of this church at Philippi, we actually see come over and help us to the people, and then the end result is kind of leading them into a congregation, which leads to my last question. In Titus chapter 1, Paul says to Titus to go into the island of Crete where the start and to start to proclaim the gospel, win people to faith in Jesus Christ. You mentioned J.D. Payne's quote, we're going to evangelize this. I love how my friends in Australia, Scott Sanders says, to evangelize new churches into existence. But then it wasn't just evangelism. He instructs Titus to put in order what remains by appointing elders in every town. So there's evangelize and congregationalize. Make that bridge for us in church planning for our last comment on the podcast.
Well, I think at the end of the day, this is about organizing the mission to be as effective as possible to fulfill the Great Commission, right? And so in order for us to do that, obviously, number one, we want to go into towns and reach people with the gospel of Jesus, share Jesus, plant seeds of the gospel, see those people saved, and then raise up people who are saved to be those who are leaders within our church. And so we have to spend time developing, time discipling, time like Jesus did with his disciples, showing the ways of Jesus, and then sending out to go and continue to do the same thing. You know, you use the illustration of Paul going and to different cities. When you go to even the story of the church plant at Corinth, right? Paul goes in, and I think that there's this element where church planting, yes, is going into a new area of need for the gospel and reaching people, but there's also this element of linking up with the people of God. And so Priscilla and Aquila are those who are God-fearers in Corinth who come alongside Paul to help gather and get organized for the operations and ministry of the church there in the city of Corinth. And so I think it's a little bit of both and. There's the evangelism, but then there's the congregationalism that obviously leaders are raised up to lead and mobilize for the ministry so that we plant churches who plant churches who plant churches.
Love it. We're listening to Rob Wilton. I'm Ed Stetzer. This is the newchurches.com podcast, and we're continuing our conversations. We're going to go through the next several episodes, the most Googled church planting questions. And I think you're going to find these challenging and helpful. Thanks to Rob for joining me in our conversation today and for our team at newchurches.com, newchurches.com podcast, and at the Send Network. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planning Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.